Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN has launched a $1 billion humanitarian appeal for the people of Turkey, who are still reeling from one of the most devastating earthquakes to hit the country in a century. The funding covers a three-month period and will assist 5.2 million people. Aid organisations will use the money to scale up vital support for government-led relief efforts rapidly in food security, protection, education, water and shelter. Launching the appeal, UN Chief Antonio Guterres noted that Turkey is home to the largest number of refugees in the world and has shown enormous generosity to its Syrian neighbours for years. Now is the time for the world to support the people of Turkey, just as they have stood in solidarity with others seeking assistance, Mr. Guterres said. Staying with the UN Secretary-General, who warned on Thursday that a staggering 78 million girls and boys around the world don't go to school at all today because of conflict, climate disasters and displacement. In a call for more funding for education in emergencies, the UN chief insisted that no one should be denied their chance to learn. In total, 222 million children face obstacles to education. To help them, 18 countries and private partners pledged $826 million for the UN Global Fund Education Cannot Wait. UN Special Envoy for Global Education, Gordon Brown, explained why help is needed so urgently.
We are talking about the most isolated, the most desolate, the most neglected children of the world. We're talking about girls who will find themselves trafficked or forced into child labour or into child marriage unless we can help them.
To the Horn of Africa now, where urgent life-saving assistance is needed for the many migrants heading to Gulf states via Djibouti and Yemen, the UN Migration Agency, IOM, has warned. Latest data from the UN agency indicates that the number of migrants who entered Djibouti almost doubled from 2021 to 2022. The so-called Eastern Migration Route is one of the most dangerous in the world, where many deaths go unreported, IOM said. In a call for help on Thursday, IOM Director General Antonio Vitorino said that the situation was a forgotten crisis, but migrants deserve support and to be treated with dignity, Mr. Vitorino insisted, in support of an appeal for $84 million to help the more than 1 million migrants and the communities hosting them in the region. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Good afternoon. It is Friday, February 17th, 2023, here in Kansas. Coming up following the latest headline news from Democracy Now.
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
No more thoughts and prayers. We need to work now for a better world.
Working for such reform is our guest, Amy Hagstrom Miller, a national abortion provider.
We'll talk about the devastation to abortion access wrought by the Dobbs ruling.
With following headlines from today's Democracy Now!
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine's president has ruled out trading territory for peace as part of any negotiated settlement with Russian leader Vladimir Putin. President Volodymyr Zelensky made the remarks in an interview with the BBC.
Any territorial compromise would make us weaker as a state. It's not about compromise itself. Why would we be afraid of that? We have millions of compromises in life every day. The question is, with whom? With Putin? No, because there's no trust.
Ukraine's military says it shot down 16 of 36 Russian missiles fired at targets across Ukraine Thursday, including its largest oil refinery, which reportedly sustained damage. Meanwhile, Russia's intensified ground attacks along the front in southern and eastern Ukraine in a spring offensive launched just ahead of the first anniversary of Russia's invasion. The United Nations is appealing to donors for $1 billion to scale up relief operations in Turkey, where the death toll from this month's massive earthquakes has topped 38,000. Nearly 6,000 others have been confirmed dead in Syria, where the UN is appealing for an additional $400 million for humanitarian assistance. Meanwhile, there's growing alarm over plans by the World Food Program to slash aid to hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees who fled ethnic cleansing and genocide in Burma. The UN agency says they'll be forced to cut rations to Rohingya living in camps in Bangladesh due to a severe funding shortfall. In a statement, the humanitarian group Save the Children said Rohingya children and their families are at breaking point and need no more support, not less. President Biden's made his first formal comments about the U.S. military's downing of four objects flying over North America earlier this month. Biden said the first shot down was a Chinese surveillance balloon that violated U.S. sovereignty, something he called unacceptable, but that the other three were not believed related to surveillance by a foreign power. Biden said Thursday he planned to speak with the Chinese President Xi Jinping about the surveillance balloon.
This episode underscores the importance of maintaining open lines of communication between our diplomats and our military professionals.
A possible source for one of the yet-to-be-identified objects is the Northern Illinois Bottle Cap Balloon Brigade. The hobbyist club believes one of its $12 inflatable balloons may have been shot down by a Lockheed Martin F-22 firing a $400,000 Sidewinder missile over Canada's Yukon Territory on February 11th. Israel's Knesset has passed a law allowing the government to revoke the citizenship or residency of Palestinians determined to have committed what Israel calls acts of terror. The new law exclusively targets Palestinians in Israel and occupied East Jerusalem, allowing them to be deported to the occupied West Bank and Gaza. Legal experts say such deportations would constitute an act of forcible transfer, which is a war crime. The United Nations Security Council is expected to vote next week on a Palestinian-backed resolution demanding an immediate halt to all Israeli settlement activities and condemning the annexation of illegal settlements and outposts. Diplomats told reporters the U.S. is seeking to replace the resolution with a weaker statement. In Washington, State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel declined to say if the U.S. would veto the resolution.
The introduction of this resolution is unhelpful in supporting the conditions necessary to advance negotiations for a two-state solution.
In Georgia, the special grand jury investigating attempts by President Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election determined at least one witness committed perjury during their testimony. That revelation came as part of a small five-page excerpt of the grand jury report made public Thursday, though it's not clear who the panel believes should be charged with crimes other than perjury or which Georgia laws may have been violated. Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis said last month, decisions about whom to prosecute are imminent. The White House dismissed Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley's call for mental competency tests for politicians over the age of 75. Haley made the remark in Charleston, South Carolina, Wednesday during her first campaign rally since announcing her 2024 presidential bid. It's seen as an attack on both 80-year-old Biden and her primary challenger, 76-year-old Donald Trump. Nikki Haley also vowed to crack down on immigration and relegate, quote, communist China to the ash heap of history, unquote. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman is seeking inpatient treatment for clinical depression at Walter Reed Hospital, his office announced. Senate Democrats rallied around their colleague, with Majority Leader Chuck Schumer tweeting, "Happy to hear Senator Fetterman is getting the help he needs and deserves. Millions of Americans like John struggle with depression each day," unquote. The freshman senator from Pennsylvania has suffered a number of health challenges recently. Last week, he was briefly hospitalized after feeling lightheaded during a Senate retreat. He was elected as U.S. senator in November, 6 months after suffering a life-threatening stroke. In Britain, Labour Party leader Keir Starmer has barred former Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn from running for re-election as a Labour candidate. Corbyn slammed the move as an attack on democracy. Corbyn has been a member of parliament since 1983 and currently serves as an independent. To see our interview with MP Jeremy Corbyn and his comments on Keir Starmer, go to democracynow.org. Nicola Sturgeon has announced she's stepping down as First Minister of Scotland. Sturgeon's the first woman to hold the post, as well as the first woman to lead the Scottish National Party.
Essentially, I've been trying to answer two questions. Is carrying on right for me? And more importantly, is me carrying on right for the country, for my party, and for the independence cause I have devoted my life to.
Sturgeon will stay in her role until a successor is appointed. Her resignation comes amid stark divisions over Scottish independence. In November, the British Supreme Court ruled Scotland cannot hold another independence referendum without the green light from the British government. The UK government also recently vetoed a Scottish bill that would make it easier for people to change their legal gender. Sturgeon condemned the veto as a full frontal attack on the Scottish Parliament. Over 200 New York Times contributors have published an open letter criticizing the Times' recent coverage of stories involving transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people, in particular concerning medical issues. The letter says Republican lawmakers have cited the Times' coverage to justify bans on gender-affirming care for youth. In response, the top editor of the New York Times Thursday defended the paper's coverage of trans issues, warning journalists that such public criticism will, quote, not be tolerated. In Michigan, the train operated by Norfolk Southern derailed on Thursday in Van Buren Township, 30 miles west of Detroit, causing more than two dozen rail cars to pile up and triggering fears of a toxic release. Local authorities reported one rail car contained liquid chlorine, a highly corrosive chemical. Norfolk Southern said no hazardous material spilled. The crash came as Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan visited East Palestine, Ohio, to meet with residents affected by this month's crash of a Norfolk Southern train carrying vinyl chloride and other toxic and carcinogenic chemicals, which were released in the so-called controlled burn that sent a toxic mushroom cloud high into the air. We'll get the latest on that story after headlines. And Tesla has recalled more than 360,000 electric vehicles over the risks posed by their self-driving software. The recall follows several high-profile accidents, including an eight-car pileup on the San Francisco Bay Bridge last November, triggered when a self-driving Tesla Model S abruptly changed lanes and rapidly applied its brakes. Nine people were injured, including a two-year-old child. On Thursday, Democratic Senator Ed Markey tweeted, Tesla's recall is long overdue, adding, quote, we've been sounding the alarm on the critical flaws in Tesla's software and its misleading advertising for years. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration must continue to protect the public against these safety risks, and Tesla must stop overstating the capabilities of its vehicles, unquote. Meanwhile, Tesla workers at a factory in Buffalo, New York, have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board saying Tesla managers fired more than 30 people this week after they announced their intention to form what would be the company's first U.S.-based labor union. And here in New York, the state Senate has rejected Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul's nominee to become the state's top judge. Hector LaSalle came under fire from unions as well as civil rights, immigrant rights, and reproductive rights groups had opposed LaSalle's nomination, citing what they described as his anti-labor and anti-abortion rulings. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
From snowy Madison, Wisconsin, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio, radio for the rest of us, the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, one-third of the American adult population today that is not affiliated with religion, including atheists, agnostics, and nothing in particulars.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This is the February 16th, 2023 edition of Free Thought Radio. Once again, the amazing Grant Blaschka, who's with Audio for the Arts, is our engineer in the Stephen Ohl Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall. Freethought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Freethought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a national membership association of atheists, agnostics, skeptics, humanists, and works to keep religion out of government, as is required under the United States' godless and totally secular constitution. And we have gotten over 40,000 members in the last month. If you're a member, thank you. And if not, we would love to have you sign up to join us in our work, because we have a big challenge ahead of us to keep dogma out of government, as you'll be seeing in our news updates today. And so you can get information and join us at ffrf.org.
The principal opposition to abortion rights is religion. And today we're going to talk about abortion rights. In the second half of today's show, we will hear Amy Hagstrom Miller, the founder of Whole Woman's Health, which brought the case Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt to the Supreme Court, as she accepts FFRF's Forward Award at our convention in San Antonio last fall. Amy was the principal plaintiff in the suit against Texas's SB 8 law. She'll talk about the devastation to abortion access wrought by the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision.
This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist, FFRF attorney Chris Lyne joined you, Dan, to talk about the Christian ads that have been running on TV, including during the Super Bowl, that say, Jesus, he gets us, and we did not get it.
So during our Ask an Atheist show, we played some of those ads and also some of the reaction to those ads. Chris, who wrote a blog about it, explains the purpose behind those ads.
This campaign is ostensibly a strategy to rebrand Jesus to the younger generation. This version of Jesus is inclusive, values diversity, and cares about the issues that matter most to younger Americans. For decades, fundamentalist Christians have largely ignored Jesus and his rather sizable role in the Bible in favor of radical right-wing theology, grievance politics, and hate. Rather than rethinking the popular Christian stances on a host of important issues like abortion, LGBTQ rights, and the like, the solution they've come up with, as you see here, is a $1 billion media blitz for Jesus.
And, of course, fully funded, as I'm sure you talked about, by the Christian nationalists and religious right.
Yeah, and Stephen Green of Hobby Lobby was one of the major contributors to that. So a new episode of Ask an Atheist airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon Central on Facebook Live on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the show. You can find it at facebook.com/4FFRF. That's the number 4FFRF.
On our TV show this week, Free Thought Matters, we talk with our favorite columnist, Katha Pollitt, who writes for The Nation, who's written for The Nation for 40 years. She's an author, essayist, critic, and atheist. Katha was recently on Comedy Central's The Daily Show with guest host Wanda Sykes. And during our interview with Katha, we asked her if she thinks many politicians may have just simply been posturing regarding abortion rights prior to the overturning of the Dobbs decision.
I think a lot of politicians don't care one way or the other about abortion or many other things that they have to pretend to really care about. And I think that when Roe was there, it was safe to vote in the legislature for all kinds of anti-choice things because you knew they wouldn't actually be upheld. It was just a vote to say, hey, anti-choice people, I'm on your side. But now those votes really matter. And so I think that we might see that some people back off. On the other hand, we might not see that because the stakes have just been raised higher, but the sides haven't changed, really. As state legislatures get more and more worked up about this, some state legislatures, we may see that just more and more crazy laws get passed.
Well, that seems to be what's happening. You can watch that episode of Faith That Matters right now on the FFRF YouTube channel and look for the Faith That Matters playlist. And Katha is always memorable.
Yeah. And if you happen to live in one of the 13 major cities where Faith That Matters is broadcast on local television, you can watch that show every Sunday morning. For stations and times, check our website, ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters. Or go to ffrf.org and look for the news dropdown, and you will see it there.
So there is a whole lot of news nationally and for FFRF, and let's start with the local news. It's not really local, it's really of national impact, and that is that the Catholic Church is insisting that it has the right to public funding to start a public-funded charter school in Oklahoma. And this is a huge fight. We had published a counter-argument, a memo last month to what the Oklahoma Attorney General had said, that a charter school could be religiously affiliated. And now the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City and the Diocese of Tulsa have gone forward with an application to the Oklahoma Statewide Virtual Charter School Board. And we are asking for it to be rejected. It's going to be a huge legal fight, and we are rallying the troops for it already, and we will keep you posted.
They should raise their own money for their own schools and not ask us taxpayers to pay for it. Our attorneys have been busy writing letters of complaint around the country. FFRF is complaining about the Midlothian, Texas ISD school board's divisive practice of regularly having Christian prayer at its board meetings. And in Ohio, FFRF is urging the East Knox Local School District to stop board member and pastor Matt Schwartz from regularly opening school board meetings with prayers, which sometimes include Christian sermons targeting individual students.
Well, he went on a rant quoting the Bible about how it's an abomination for a man to wear a woman's garments and a woman to wear a man's garments, and singled out a second grader and the second grader's family. The second grader came to school in a dress. Totally inappropriate. This person should be forced to resign.
So we do have a victory, though, to report.
Yes, and it's a victory in a place that we've had another victory in, the Chino Valley Unified School District in California, where we had sued to stop a similar situation to what we just described in Texas and Ohio, out-of-control school board prayers to open school board meetings and introduction of pastors and theology and so on. And a lot of it was at the instigation of a school board member named James Na. And James Na has, we won before the Ninth Circuit. We got attorney's fees, et cetera. We had so many people come forward to wanting to be plaintiffs because they were so disgusted with the pervasiveness of fundamentalist Christianity being integrated into the school board meetings and other things in the district. So we stopped that, yay. But James Na is still on the school board, and we got a complaint from two Chino Valley employees who got a Christmas card with a religious message that were printed and delivered to teachers' boxes using school resources from James Na. It had a poem, a very bad poem, that talked about Christ being alive, the light of the world. And so we wrote Chino Valley, Chris Lyne, our attorney, wrote Chino Valley, and they have said that was inappropriate and it will not happen again. So we are continuing to keep religion out of schools in Chino Valley. And then let's turn to the national news, and there is so much. And we want to point out the alarming deluge of voucher proposals and initiatives in state legislatures around the country. This includes in 11 states already just this year. 11 states are entertaining these laws, and already two of these states have passed laws to strip public schools of funding and funnel tax dollars to religious schools. We talked about Iowa, that terrible bill that is going to cost taxpayers $345 million per year once it's fully implemented. It only took lawmakers in Utah 8 days to rush the state's largest voucher program through their legislature. That was at the end of last month. That will cost taxpayers $42 million. Other states, Kansas, has an alarmingly similar bill to Iowa's that they are rushing through. It hasn't passed yet. We are seeing other states include, depending on where you live, Texas, South Dakota, New Hampshire, Florida, Idaho, Nebraska, Virginia, South Carolina. This is about gutting our public schools, destroying our public education, which is the bedrock of our democracy, and funneling money to unaccredited, unaccountable, private, mostly religious schools, and including homeschools, which are largely religious. So this is a real concern, and if you are a member, you are getting our action alerts. We need you to contact your legislature, call them as well, testify against these bills, because it is a deluge.
Regular listeners of this show know that the U.S. House of Representatives has a Free Thought Caucus. The Congressional Free Thought Caucus promotes public policy formed on the basis of reason, evidence, science, and strong moral values. And FFRF is proud to announce that Representative Kevin Mullen, a Democrat from California, has recently joined the Congressional Free Thought Caucus, demonstrating his commitment to the separation of state and church and freethinkers' rights.
And also, Dan, we want to say thank you and goodbye to two former members of the Congressional Free Thought Caucus who just retired. And they include Jerry McNerney of California, whom we have interviewed on Free Thought Matters, a great guy, and Carolyn Maloney, who was a Democrat from New York, and they left Congress in January. So we want to thank them for their service and say that there are currently 16 members of the Congressional Free Thought Caucus, co-chaired by Representatives Jared Huffman and Jamie Raskin. And among those members of the Free Thought Caucus include Hank Johnson, Representative Hank Johnson, who is a Buddhist from Georgia. And we have also interviewed Representative Johnson on Free Thought Matters, and he is a leader in civil rights. And we are pleased to point out that in February, he reintroduced an important bill to reform the Supreme Court. We have talked about this bill before. It's the Supreme Court Ethics and Refusal Act, and it was also introduced in the Senate by Senate Sheldon Whitehouse, who's a Democrat from Rhode Island. And it would require Supreme Court justices to recuse themselves from cases where they have a conflict of interest, an obvious thing to do. It will require the justices to adopt and follow a code of ethics, establish advisory review by appellate court judges to ensure transparency standards over gifts and travel, and require disclosure on lobbying and dark money interests. And a lot of this came up thanks to the disclosure that Virginia Thomas, who is married to Justice Clarence Thomas, had worked with the White House as an insider to overturn the 2020 presidential election prior to the January 6th insurrection. In the meantime, her husband was voting on these issues. No, it wasn't known that she was involved in this and had not recused himself. And, of course, we've also talked about the anti-abortion crusader, Reverend Rob Shank, who's had a change of mind and has pointed out that they've been praying with Supreme Court justices at the Supreme Court. And he alleges an improper leak and meeting between Justice Samuel Alito and two anti-abortion donors. And FFRF has written John Roberts, Chief Justice, twice over these matters, saying there should be an investigation. Nada.
So in international news, Portugal is yet another country that is scarred by the crimes of the church. A recent headline that should surprise nobody. Thousands of children abused by members of Portugal's Catholic Church over 70 years. Should we be surprised at that? What is surprising is that the numbers that they report are a bit low, 4,815 cases since 1950. About three-fourths of those were priests, the perpetrators, and most victims were male. Most abuse took place when children were aged 10 to 14, with the youngest child aged only 2 years old. The Vatican was blocking the access to the church archives, but the report has come up Clergy sexual abuse of children has destroyed too many lives in Portugal and across the planet.
And, of course, if you're interested in this issue, you can see the Black Collar Crime Blotter. It's 2 pages in every issue of Free Thought Today that is published, our newspaper, 10 times a year by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And after the break, we are going to hear about the futility of thoughts and prayers when it comes to gun assault.
Futility. Yeah.
The futility. And we are going to hear a song by the free-thinking composer Jerome Kern. And then we'll listen to Amy Hagstrom Miller, who was the Texas-based Whole Woman Health Center CEO, tell us about the devastation to abortion access brought by the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and in a minute we're going to have a little entertainment, but first we want to spend a little time talking about the connection between what we do and gun control or rational gun laws, because this week is the 5th anniversary of the mass shooting at Parkland, Florida High School, and we saw yet another shooting of college students the night before that anniversary in Michigan, and there were some developments that were of note, including the fact that Michigan House Majority Whip Ranjiv Puri had the guts to compose a letter and a tweet over Monday's mass shooting of college students in East Lansing that began, and we can't say it over the radio, the F word, F your thoughts and prayers. And after extending his condolences, he explained why he said that. He said, "Thoughts and prayers without action and change are meaningless. Our office will continue to work tirelessly to pass a common-sense gun reform immediately. We will not stop until our students can attend school without fear, our communities can attend places of worship in peace, and our society is safe from senseless gun violence." And we do have to note, there's not a whole lot known about the Michigan shooter, except, who did then, after killing 3 Michigan students and critically wounding 5 others, he turned the gun on himself and killed himself. But he had posted a Bible verse on his profile, his Facebook profile, a very unpleasant one, as so many Bible verses are, from Luke 10:19. "I have given you the authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you." So we can only assume that he was full of some kind of religious delusion or hallucination or, mentally ill and clinging to religion and seeing these unarmed college students as snakes and scorpions. And the Bible is a behavior grab bag, and if you go into it, many dangerous things can happen. But in this case, it isn't so much why this happened as how. He had a history of having served. He had a misdemeanor strike against him for previous conviction in 2019 for possessing a loaded firearm in a vehicle. He had been on probation. What was this guy doing with a gun? And why is this terrible pandemic of gunfire, gun assault happening in this country? And what are we going to do about it? And we do think that as humanists, we have to work to make this world a better, safer, saner, more rational place. And that is never going to happen through thoughts and prayers.
A couple of weeks ago, we celebrated the anniversary of the birth of the free-thinking composer Jerome Kern. But we didn't have time to hear a song by Jerome Kern. So today, let's listen to the jazz singer Tahira Clayton and the jazz pianist Addison Fry, who are both supporters of FFRF. Addison's family has been members of FFRF for many decades, and Tahira is one of the Godless Gospel singers. Let's listen to them as they perform a spontaneous performance right here in Madison, Wisconsin, of the Jerome Kern song, I'm Old Fashioned.
I'm old fashioned. I love the moonlight. I love the old fashioned things. The sound of rain upon my window pane. The starry song that April sings. This year's fancies are passing fancies, but thanks eyes and holding hands, if my heart understands, I'm old-fashioned. I love the moonlight, that's how I want to be, as long as you agree to stay old-fashioned with me. I'm old-fashioned, I love the moonlight, I love the old-fashioned things, the sound of rain upon my window pane, starry song that April sings. Year's fancies are passing fancies, but thanks eyes holding hands, this my heart understands. I'm old-fashioned, I love the moonlight, that's how I want to be, as long as you agree to stay old-fashioned with me. Holding hands is my heart really understands. I'm old-fashioned, I love the moonlight, that's how I want to be, as long as you agree to stay old-fashioned, stay old-fashioned, stay old-fashioned with me.
And that's Tahira Clayton with pianist Addison Fry.
And of course they're married.
And they're married.
After the break, Amy Hagstrom Miller with Whole Woman's Health tells us about the devastation to abortion access that's been wrought by the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. FFRF's 2022 Forward Award honoree was Amy Hagstrom Miller, who founded Whole Woman's Health in 2003. Those are a series of clinics that provide abortion and gynecological care services around the country, including four clinics in Texas. She brought the Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt case, in which the U.S. Supreme Court in 2016 ruled in her favor, 5-3, that Texas couldn't restrict delivery of abortion care through trap laws that place an undue burden. She was then chief plaintiff in the lawsuit challenging SB 8, which was that draconian Texas law banning abortion at 6 weeks and deputizing anti-abortion strangers to sue anyone who aids or abets a pregnant person in having an abortion. Hagstrom Miller also founded the Whole Woman's Health Alliance in 2014 that works to reduce the stigma around providing quality abortion care.
FFRF's Forward Award is reserved for individuals who are moving society forward. The previous year recipients were Margaret Atwood and Gloria Steinem. Here is an excerpt of Amy Hagstrom Miller's acceptance speech last October at our 45th annual convention in San Antonio.
Well, thank y'all. I will tell you that this year has been quite a gut punch. Normally, we are at Whole Woman's Health and Whole Woman's Health Alliance, we're described as resilient, as brave, as heroic. This year has had a lot of trauma. It's had a lot of tragedy. It's had a lot of grief and despair. And from those combined complex emotions, I come to you today. It is the first time I have come to Texas since Roe fell. I no longer live here, and so I wasn't sure how it would feel to be here. But I was reminded last night walking along the Riverwalk that these kinds of laws don't represent the majority of Texans. The majority of people in this country don't support the kinds of laws that have taken place in this country. And I'm emboldened by how the majority of people in this country live and believe and support access to safe abortion, and just getting them to vote and speak up and participate. Hopefully we can change the powers that be. So with that, I will take you to Texas. What I would call the good stuff in reproductive rights comes from Texas. Keep in mind, Roe v. Wade came from Texas. And Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt came from Texas. And Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt was seen as the reproductive rights case for a generation. We were able to preserve the undue burden standard. We were able to use, drumroll, science to roll back people's feelings and beliefs and really illustrate that restrictions on abortion do not advance women's health and safety, but in fact they damage families, they damage communities. Basically, we sort of slapped down the powers that be in the state of Texas. One of the justices in the majority decision said, anti-abortion politicians can't insert themselves willy-nilly between a woman and her right to seek an abortion without supporting those restrictions by medical evidence and scientific fact. That's huge. It was huge. We sort of missed our opportunity for swagger because a certain someone was elected a few months later, and there's been sort of a downslide ever since when it comes to reproductive rights in this country. An enormous amount of abortion regulations come from Texas, and it is true that what happens here does not stay here. Texas is considered a starting ground for a lot of anti-abortion regulations, 24-hour waiting period, forced ultrasound, state-mandated information, information we have to give patients that connects abortion to breast cancer, all this nonsense. All of it had its root here in Texas, and you've seen it spread across the country. I'm going to take you on a journey of a few years' time to set the tone, and I'm going to start here with 2013, just so that you have a sense of what was before HB2 even happened, which was the case called Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt that we eventually won. Before that, we had all of these restrictions, some of the ones I described already. We also had a two-visit requirement, mandatory at least 24-hour delay. Patients had to be seen in two different visits, sometimes usually three or four different visits before they could complete their abortion. Abortion facilities were highly regulated such that there was hardly any facilities left with the amount of regulation that went into play. And on top of that, we were introducing additional restrictions with HB2 in 2013 that required ambulatory surgical center facilities, required admitting privileges for physicians, banned abortion at 20 weeks, et cetera. That was a sort of precursor to what happened last year with SB8. HB2 in 2013 served to shutter all but five clinics in the state of Texas. Prior to HB2, there were 44. A year before that, there were 60. And keep in mind that you can fit seven Virginias in the state of Texas. Texas has four of the top 10 cities as far as population in this country. So what we're talking about is 10% of this country's population of reproductive age lives here in Texas. So that's the sort of groundwork that went into our challenging HB2. We were able to make the argument that it was an undue burden for millions of people and that it unduly affected lots of people who lived in parts of the state that were well over 150 miles each way to be able to get care. So it took 3 years. Lawyers say that's fast. If you're answering the phone from people who are seeking abortion care, it felt like an eternity that we were not able to see people until we finally were able to get justice in the Supreme Court in 2016. As soon as we knocked down the sort of notion that anti-abortion people had women's health and safety in mind, like I described before, and we illustrated that, in fact, restrictions on abortion roll health and safety backwards, and we put forward science, medical evidence, et cetera, as soon as we won the Whole Woman's Health case, you see the anti-abortion movement take a pivot. away from concern about the pregnant person and a focus on the fetus. And you've seen this since 2016 with all the kinds of restrictions and regulations that have been introduced since 2016. Within 5 days of us winning Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt, Texas introduced a law that required every fetus or product of conception to have a funeral or cremation, which we had to start a lawsuit literally about 5 days after we won one. We had to become plaintiffs once again. They restricted gestation. They tried this heartbeat stuff. And you see a trend nationally with gestational bans, whether it's a 20-week ban, a 15-week ban, a 6-week ban. In fact, they have started to call the pregnant person a host. So the landscape has been forever changed in this country by the appointees that the former president was able to make. We have some remarkable zealots on the Supreme Court at this point, and it's not only the Supreme Court that the Trump administration changed forever the appeals courts and the federal court system in this country. One of the first signs of this was when Governor Abbott here in Texas used the COVID-19 pandemic in order to restrict abortion. He used the pandemic as an excuse to ban abortion. He tried to say that abortion was not essential medical care. Keep in mind, abortion is extremely timely. And when people lose their jobs and they lose their health care, their need for abortion skyrockets. He used the pandemic as a way to ban abortion, saying that abortion providers used a disproportionate amount of PPE, and we were somehow stealing PPE from the hospitals. It was an interesting time. Whole Woman's Health figured out how to do medication abortion without using any PPE at all, and we stayed open and resisted that ban, but the chilling effect of Governor Abbott and our Attorney General, et cetera, kind of coming after abortion providers was pretty profound at that time. So we found ourselves suing again. And this time we did get an injunction and were able to illustrate that the executive order was not in the best interest of people's health and safety. And it was about 3 weeks' time, back and forth and back and forth, where hundreds of patients' appointments were canceled, and then we called them and rescheduled them. And keep in mind, during a pandemic, people were literally begging us. It was horrific to see the dignity and the respect that was lost from people in our country who deserved access to health care during a pandemic, especially access to safe abortion care. In total, 13 other states took the example from Texas and attempted to restrict abortion access during that time, and this was April of 2021. Then we get another version of an attack on abortion, and in March of 2021, the legislature introduced a 6-week ban on abortion. The anti-abortion folks call this a heartbeat ban. Science will tell you there is not a heartbeat. There can't be a heartbeat before there's a fetus. But this is language. They're very good at language. They're very good at messaging, and introduced that restriction in the state of Texas. And this law was the most restrictive abortion ban that this country has seen at that point in time. The other part of the SB 8 that was terrifying is that it's what they call, quote unquote, vigilante justice, that it incentivized people to report anybody who might not only provide an abortion, but do what's called aiding and abetting in the assistance of abortion. So somebody who gives somebody a ride, somebody who lends somebody money. It was attempted and successfully terrified everybody in all different stratas of the society. People were afraid of helping folks get to the abortion care that they deserved and that they needed. We haven't seen a law like this since the Fugitive Slave Act, where people were incentivized to hunt other people down. I remember people at that time called it Texas Taliban. I saw a lot of people posting about on Twitter and on social media, and I remember saying, first of all, that's pretty racist. Second of all, this isn't the Taliban. This is homegrown United States Christian extremism.
We'll catch the end of Amy Hagstrom-Miller's speech about abortion rights right after this break. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation. to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are listening to the second half of an acceptance speech by Amy Hagstrom Miller of the 2022 Forward Award from the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and she is an abortion provider.
So we fought until the last minute. The night before that law went into effect, our Fort Worth clinic was, our parking lot was packed with patients. People were very aware that this might be the last day in the state of Texas that they could get access to safe abortion. We decided to try to care for as many people as we could, and we stayed open until midnight. The anti-abortion people went crazy. They all came and surrounded the clinic. They brought these big lights, and they shined them at the clinic under surveillance to try to watch us to be sure that they could catch us if the staff indeed provided any care after midnight. It was an incredible sort of standoff, and some of those patients that were in the clinic were very aware that they were receiving care that their friends and their sisters and their colleagues might not be able to receive even just on the next day in the state of Texas. We tried to get an injunction to block SB 8 from going into effect. And here again, as we've experienced in Texas, it was this back and forth, right? We get an injunction in Austin in federal court. It gets overturned by the Fifth Circuit. Then we have to appeal to the Supreme Court to step in, and it bounces back and forth. All the while, the people that we are caring for, the people who are calling us on the phone asking for care, they're not watching the news. They're not seeing this back and forth ping pong. What they need is access to safe abortion care. More than 70% of the people we serve in the state of Texas are parenting already when they seek abortion. They know exactly what that ultrasound looks like, and they know exactly what will happen if they continue that pregnancy because they're already negotiating a family, multiple jobs, keep in mind, in the middle of a pandemic. So the Supreme Court, as we've talked about earlier, refused to grant us an injunction for relief from SB 8, allowing the law to stay in place. And this led to the scathing dissent, which I highly recommend you read, from Justice Sotomayor. Sometimes we call her the new RBG. Thank goodness. She said the court should not be so content as to ignore its constitutional obligation to protect not only the rights of women, but also the sanctity of precedent and the rule of law. I dissent. Soon after that, Vice President Harris invited me and some other providers to the White House. It was the first time an abortion provider had been invited to the White House since 1992. On the day that we were there, the Department of Justice announced its case against Texas. It was pretty cool to be in the White House when they announced a case called the United States versus Texas. It was a pretty good day. The White House started to say abortion. Not really, I hadn't heard it from President Biden until Roe fell, until the Dobbs decision was leaked, but Vice President Harris said that in that little room that I was in. And I want to point out why that's important, because a lot of the people who have abortions in this country find themselves sort of invisible in our public rhetoric. When people talk about abortion as a choice, as a reproductive decision, our patients don't call us and say, I'd like to make an appointment for a reproductive decision. Our patients don't call us and say, I'd like to exercise my civil right to have an abortion. People don't experience this care in the framework that we oftentimes use as progressive people in our culture. And it's very important that the millions of people who've had abortions in this country and the millions of people who have been part of that abortion, whether they were the man who got the person pregnant or whether they're a loved one of that person, see their experience reflected in the way we talk. Right? So it's very important to start to hear the people that we elected on a platform use the language that's really necessary at this time. So one of the first times I heard Vice President Harris say that word. We got an injunction. It felt like it lasted about a minute and a half, from Judge Pittman. By this time, there was so much uncertainty in the state of Texas. There was delays, there was chaos, there were begging patients, there was back and forth and back and forth with if the law was in effect or the law wasn't in effect. There was a ton of what I would think of as sort of increased attention and power given to this notion of aiding and abetting. It got way more power than it actually should on the legal books. And what happened in the state of Texas is that anti-abortion forces got total compliance from every provider and every helper in the state without ever actually suing anyone. I don't know how many of you have read Foucault and other like social scientists, but pre-compliance or over-compliance is one of the first signs of authoritarianism. It's understandable because they were bounty hunting physicians. These are people who were being told that they would go to jail and be fined. But what happened is this terror of doing the work that we love and helping the people that we are highly trained to help because of the fear of these bounty hunters and this vigilante justice system. Hardly anybody provided abortions when we had this little injunction, because the other thing about SB 8 is that it provided for retroactive lawsuits. If an injunction was lifted and you provided any care during that injunctive period, SB 8 had a provision that allows people to go back and sue you after the fact. It's amazing that this law got passed. And so, of course, very few people, I think maybe there were 10 procedures provided during that really short injunction period. And then, once again, the Fifth Circuit reversed the injunction. And SB 8 has been enforced ever since. We ended up challenging that reversal of the injunction and bringing it back to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court chose not to step in. And we had to get a hearing at the Supreme Court. And I never thought I'd end up at the Supreme Court again so fast. But there we were with our own case, Whole Woman's Health v. Jackson, in front of the Supreme Court on November 1st of 2021, trying to knock down SB 8. And 1 month later, the court heard the Dobbs case from Mississippi on December 1st of 2021. Keep in mind that the Mississippi case was originally just about a 15-week ban. And then once the Supreme Court makeup changed from President Trump's nominations and the swearing in of the new justices, the Mississippi added Roe to that case and asked the court to look into the argument that Roe was argued on and appeal for a reverse of Roe. If any of you listened to the arguments in the Dobbs case, we knew we were in trouble. It was a completely different court than the court my Whole Woman's Health case had been in front of just 5 years before. This is the arguments where Amy Coney Barrett suggests that women just drop babies off at fire stations as a solution to unplanned pregnancy. I mean, it was just like I was gobsmacked listening to the kinds of things that the new justices were suggesting. U.S. v. Texas and Whole Woman's Health v. Jackson were both dismissed shortly after the Dobbs case was heard, so we didn't get justice in either of those cases. And then here comes May. Unprecedented, never happened in the history of this entire country, but the draft decision, which one could just hope that they might have edited a little bit before the final decision, but they didn't. The draft decision was leaked in the Dobbs case, and it is shocking if any of you have read it. And it was very obviously a draft where Justice Alito, the lead writer on the draft, was very interested in overturning Roe. And the country went into a tailspin. Folks were no longer like, what if, what if, what if? It was like, when? You know, when is this decision going to come down, and how are we going to prepare for it? So, here we are. I think it's important for us all to remember that abortion is a moral and social good. Access to safe abortion improves communities. It improves mental health. It improves physical health. It improves economic health. The data to support that since Roe is exponential. I mean, just talk to any economist, talk to anybody who studies the statistics about how much access to safe abortion has improved our society writ large. I think it's important for us to look at abortion as a human rights issue, not only as a woman's rights issue. Millions of men have benefited from access to safe abortion in this country, and I think it's time for all of us to really embrace that this is a human rights issue, because we all know somebody or love somebody who's either had an abortion or might need an abortion at some time in their lives. There's a new frontier for anti-abortion forces. We're starting to see them cross borders. We're starting to see them try to foment anti-abortion activity in the sort of red communities in blue states, trying to get sanctuary city bans or local city councils to try to ban abortion care. So pay attention to that. So my asks of you would be to follow us on social media, Whole Woman's Health and Whole Woman's Health Alliance, because we can give you lots of information about what to do. And I would ask you to speak about the positive aspects of abortion in your life and in people that you've known. Use the aspirational narrative. Because of abortion, I have been able to do X. Because of abortion, somebody I know or love was able to do X. I think it's important for us to shift that rhetoric to the positive value of abortion instead of look at it through the framework that the opposition looks at, through the stigma and through the shame.
That was Amy Hagstrom Miller's acceptance speech of the 2022 Forward Award from FFRF, and you can also go see the video of the entire speech at our website under the events link. There's the 2022 convention, and all of the videos are up. That's an excellent speech, so there's a little bit more there to it.
Well, thank you for listening to Free Thought Radio. That's our show for today. We want to thank listeners in Philadelphia to WOOMLP and in New Jersey, in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania to WZML, in Madison, Wisconsin, right here where we are, WMUULP and WIDEFM, in Janesville, Wisconsin to WADR Community Radio, in Central Texas, where in College Station / Bryan, Texas, to KEOS. Over in San Marcos, Texas, we do want to mess with Texas, don't we? KZSM. In Missouri, in Central Missouri, City of Columbia, KOPN. Over on the West Coast, in Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, which is 97.3 FM. Then in Bellows Falls, Vermont, and right on the border with New Hampshire, there's a station called WOOL. They call it Black Sheep Radio. Hello, listeners to Black Sheep Radio. In Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, that's the university station. And we also broadcast Sundays at 11 p.m. on Global Community Radio.
And Ithaca.
And
Ithaca in New York, WRFI.
I missed that. That's right. Ithaca, New York, and Watkins Glen, WRFI. Also streaming on nowwave.radio. And hello to all you podcast listeners. If you like our show, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell your friends and family to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And find out about the new podcast, We Dissent, featuring female attorneys working for state church separation, including FFRF. Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021 and support Free Thought Radio by becoming a member, and then you support the largest Free Thought Association in the United States working for state church separation. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope so.